Hello, this is Pastor Jeff Riddle of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. This is an audio version of a book review that I wrote. The book under review is one titled The Synoptic Problem, Four Views. It was edited by Stanley E. Porter and Brian R. Dyer, and it was published by Baker Academic in 2016. The book is 208 pages in length. This review appeared in print in the Midwestern Journal of Theology, Volume 19, Number 1, in the Spring 2020 edition, and it appears on pages 172 to 175. So here now is a reading of this review. The so-called synoptic problem addresses the question of the literary relationship between the first three canonical gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. The challenge of harmonizing the canonical gospel accounts of the life of Jesus stretches back to Tatian's second century Diatessaron, to Augustine's Harmony of the Evangelists, written around the year 400, and to Calvin's combined commentary on Matthew, Mark, and Luke, written in 1555. With the rise of modern historical criticism in the 19th century, the study of the relationship of the Gospels took a dramatic turn, with critics applying source criticism, advocating for Markan priority, and proposing Q as a hypothetical saying source. As we enter the 21st century, the so-called synoptic problem scholarly enterprise is indeed at a crossroads. The editors of this work acknowledge that, quote, it is an important and potentially productive time in the history of the synoptic problem, end quote, as the major proponents of various theories have passed on and, quote, a new generation of scholars have picked up the mantle left behind, end quote, page 24. This makes this book and its presentation of four distinct proposed solutions to the synoptic problem all the timelier. The book follows this format. After an introduction by the editors, four scholars each present the case for their solution to the synoptic problem. Each scholar then provides an essay responding to his colleagues. Finally, the editors offer a concluding summary and reflection. The four positions presented and defended are as follows. First, Craig Evans, an evangelical scholar from Houston Baptist University, defends the scholarly two-source hypothesis. He suggests that the major argument for this theory is what he calls its explanatory power in suggesting Mark as a common source to explain the agreement among the first three Gospels. He argues that Q is a logical necessity to explain the agreement between Matthew and Luke, and that a solid case can be made for its existence. Evans concedes that the so-called minor agreements, the places where Matthew and Luke agree in not following the sequence or wording of Mark, constitute the most vulnerable aspect of this theory. Second, Mark Goodacre of Duke University presents the Ferrer hypothesis, named for Austin Ferrer, a scholar who suggested an earlier version of this theory, also known as the Ferrer-Golder-Goodacre hypothesis. This theory holds that the evidence for Markan priority is overwhelming, but it denies the existence of Q. It suggests that Mark was written first, Matthew was written second, borrowing from Mark, and that Luke was written third, borrowing from both Mark and Matthew. Thus, the agreements between Matthew and Luke do not need to be explained by the existence of Q. Goodacre has indeed led the contemporary challenge to the Q hypothesis among mainstream academic scholars. He notes, quote, it is always useful to remind ourselves that there is no ancient evidence of any kind for Q's existence. There are no textual witnesses, no fragments, no patristic citations, nothing. It is purely a scholarly construct, a hypothetical text, end quote, page 59. He concludes, quote, "The time has come to build on the cornerstone of mark and priority and to dispense with Q," end quote, page 66. Third, David Barrett Peabody, who taught at Nebraska Wesleyan University, makes the case for the two gospel hypothesis, with Matthew and Luke written first, and then Mark drawing on these two sources for his abbreviated gospel. One intriguing argument based on external evidence is the so-called Western order of the gospels found in some early manuscripts, that order being Matthew, John, Luke, and Mark. According to Peabody, this order of dignity in which the gospels written by apostles are listed first may also reflect their compositional order. Fourth, Rainer Reisner of Dortmund University in Germany presents the orality and memory hypothesis, drawing on his research in the areas of memory and orality in the composition of the New Testament. Reisner argues for what might be considered a version of an independent development theory. The agreement among the Synoptic Gospels does not come from literary dependence, but from their reliance on common oral traditions. Thus he concludes, quote, "The Synoptic Gospels are not mutually dependent, but partially use the same intermediary sources," end quote, page 110. In his rejoinder to his fellow scholars, Goodacre refers to the synoptic problem as, quote, "the beating heart of academic study of the New Testament," end quote, page 137, and, quote, "one of the most intriguing issues in the study of ancient Christianity," end quote, page 138. In their closing summary, however, the editors of this volume ask whether the now 100-year-old discussion has resulted in a stalemate. Is there any reasonable hope that modern historical critical scholars will ever reach a consensus solution to this literary problem? The editors conclude that, quote, "the impasse is not unbreachable," end quote, and that, quote, "progressive discussions are necessary," end quote, which will provide, quote, "more sophisticated and developed arguments that will push the discussion forward," end quote, page 177. This reviewer is less hopeful. At one point, it is observed that in 1850, the priority of Mark was little known, even as a hypothesis. This is a reminder that the synoptic problem is, in fact, a novel idea in the history of Christianity. It has had its day in the sun and now seems to be fading. The Q theory, in particular, is weakening. One oddity of this book is that an evangelical, Evans, is given the task of defending the old two-source theory, and he makes some perplexing statements in doing so. At one point, for example, he suggests, quote, "the evangelists interpret and apply the Jesus tradition. It is edited, rearranged, recontextualized, sometimes paraphrased," end quote, page 37. Does this mean it does not accurately record what Jesus actually said and did? At another point, he suggests that John's account of the healing of the nobleman's son in John 4, verses 46 through 54, is simply a Johannine version of the healing of the centurion's servant in Matthew 8, verses 5 through 13, and Luke 7, 1 through 11. See pages 40 to 42. This book is a helpful review for pastors or scholars who want to keep up with the latest currents in academic study of the origins of and literary relationship among the Synoptic Gospels. The canonical Gospels remain a touchstone of the Christian faith. Faithful believers, pastors, and scholars will continue to read, preach, and teach from the first three Gospels, along with the Gospel of John, trusting that the Lord Jesus Christ did indeed send the Comforter to his disciples in order perfectly to bring to their remembrance all the things spoken by him. See John 14, verse 26. Here ends the review. Jeffrey T. Riddle, pastor, Christ Reformed Baptist Church, Louisa, Virginia. To receive other book reviews like this one, Word Magazine, podcasts, and sermons, you can subscribe to Christ Reformed Baptist Church's sermon audio feed on iTunes by searching for Christ Reformed Baptist Church, or subscribe to the Word Magazine channel on YouTube.com. You can also find other written book reviews and book notes at my blog, jeffriddle.net.